Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
I mean, what's Pro Football Focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Pete.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
Hey, as a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFF.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
And you just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, Sam. So, who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football. I like football season, all the things that go with it.
Welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo back here with Sam Monson, and it is PFF 50 time, Sam. It was revealed on PFF.com last week, the best 50 players in the NFL per PFF. It's all there. Your name's next to it, so you can take all the hate.
Yeah, except the things I'm blaming you for.
What are you blaming me for?
I don't know. I'll find some things.
We did work on the list together, and we have a very special guest today. It is PFF top 50 member, actually PFF top 8 member.
Yeah.
Bobby Wagner, linebacker from the Seattle Seahawks, going to be on later in the show.
It'll be interesting to see if ranking 8th in the NFL is disrespectful, you know, because the fans think it is, always. Like, if you're not number one, you're being disrespected.
If you're not first, you're last, Sam.
Right. So Bobby here is going to be ranked number 8. Let's see how he feels about that.
And then don't forget, we announced it last week, but the charity drive is over. It's been put over the top by someone who should be ranking in the PFF 50.
It has. I don't want to give his name out because some people don't like that kind of thing. But
no,
a
shouldn't.
Pretty healthy donation came in. That means we are now over our achieved goal. So at some point in the future, I shall be doing one of these shows dressed up like Minor League Steve with ridiculous facial hair. You just need to bring the assorted crap that I need to dress into.
All right, I'm going to gather everything. I'll gather it all up, and we'll be doing that probably sometime in July. Make it one of our preview episodes, whatever it might be.
Because you have to go back to Massachusetts to get all the crap.
Yeah, I think some's here and some is back there. Okay. I have to get the best assortment of equipment.
Yeah.
And uniform for you.
And I have to work on what this line facial hair thing looks
like. You have a few weeks to get it ready. So thank you for that. Excited about it. And we'll be doing that at some point. So appreciate all of our listeners once again coming through for us.
Yeah, for absolutely. You. Everyone that donated to this, there's a giant sum of money on its way to the Make-A-Wish Foundation, Tri-State Make-A-Wish Foundation. So thank you to everybody that donated, especially the guy that came in with the monster donation to push us over the top.
All right, so here's what we're going to do. Today, we're going to split this into two episodes. PFF 50, the best players in the NFL heading into 2021. Today, we're going to talk about the top 25, the guys that made it. We'll talk about the process. We'll have to reiterate the process on both shows just so people remember. And then we'll have Bobby on to talk about his number 8 ranking, number 1 linebacker on the list. And then later, Thursday's episode, we're going to go through the bottom half of the top 50, talk about who just missed it, who's going to be a part of the list next year. So let's start at the top, Sam. One of the first ever PFF NFL dailies that we did was a simple debate. Who's the best player in the NFL, Aaron Donald or Patrick Mahomes? And they're going to be at the top of the PFF 50. We went with Aaron Donald. Once again, the best player in the NFL heading into 2021. But explain first the process and why this wasn't a slam dunk. Grab the quarterback, grab Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, well, for a start, the PFF 50, the PFF 101, these sort of overall lists that we do typically strip out position value, right? Otherwise, particularly the 50, would be like 25 quarterbacks, one after another. Then we would get to players like Aaron Donald. Then we get a few more quarterbacks, and then we'd get everybody else. So frankly, I don't know about you, but that doesn't sound like a great list to me.
Does not.
So you strip out position value. You say, look, quarterback obviously is the most important position in the NFL, but that doesn't determine how good you are at what you do. So let's rank all these positions as if they're equal. Now, look, there's limits to that. There's no fullback on this list. Justin Tucker isn't on the list. We don't really care about kickers and punters. They may be people too, but they're not real football players. No disrespect to our friend, Mr. Leader, Tyg Leader, who, by the way, has had the CFL has been calling. CFL's interesting.
Well, we have a lot of CFL teams listening.
We got to get the NFL is obviously the next step. We got to get the NFL in there. The CFL has been calling about this guy. Kicker slash punter slash trick shots, 60-yard drop goals, whatever. NFL needs to get on the phone as well. Anyway, no disrespect to those guys, but they're not real football players. So every other position, you know, we rank them. And then it's a case of, well, how do you compare, you know, a cornerback with a wide receiver, with a center, with a quarterback? And there's no real scientific way of doing that, right? There's a lot of subjectivity to it. But I think one of the biggest ways of doing it is, what's the gap between you and the next best guy, right? How much better are you at what you do than the next guy at your position? And to me, a huge amount of sort of just how good you are, period, is understanding the context of that and understanding the context of like where your position group is right now compared with, you know, 5-10 years ago. Like, what is the current state of your position in the NFL, and where are you compared with that context?
So let's explain, because that's the context that puts Aaron Donald at the top, the best defensive player in the NFL. Just using a three-year sample, the last 3 years, 96.2 grade. And by the way, the one other thing we need to clarify, at the end of the season, we have put together PFF 101. Mm-hmm. Before the season, we put together PFF 50. The 101 is looking backwards. It's just for the last season. So we have a PFF 101 for the 2020 NFL season only. The PFF 50 is looking forward. So the bigger body of work, when you look at Donald, his three-year grade of 96.2, who's the second best interior defensive lineman during that time? Chris Jones, Kansas City Chiefs, 91.9.
Yeah.
The other guys in the running, like Cameron Hayward of the Pittsburgh Steelers, he's a 91.6. So we're talking about five grading points between Aaron Donald and that next group. Chris Jones, Cameron Hayward, Grady Jarrett's a 90.9. Fletcher Cox has dropped off for the last couple of years. He's a 91.3. So there's all these guys at 91. I mean, and then Donald at 96 overall.
The easiest way of summing it up is, look, Aaron Donald and Patrick Mahomes right now look like they're both all-time great Hall of Fame caliber players. But Patrick Mahomes wasn't the best quarterback in the NFL last year. Aaron Rodgers was, right? There, in any given season, there is two or three guys that are right up there with Mahomes. There's nobody in the same level, in the same stratosphere as Aaron Donald, and hasn't been since he came into the NFL, essentially, right? He has been at a level completely divorced from anybody else for as long as he's been in the league, in a way that just doesn't apply to Mahomes or anybody else at any other position, right? He is just in this other world. And the only player we've ever seen hit similar levels of that was the sort of 3-4 year stretch where J.J. Watt was on that kind of plane, right? Before Aaron Donald rolled in, when J.J. Watt was playing in a world by himself, the multiple defensive player of the year, before injuries started to bite, and he hasn't been the same player since. But that, I think, pushes Donald above the likes of Mahomes, is that Donald doesn't have a peer. Mahomes does. Like, Rodgers on his day is as good as Mahomes, if not better. Tom Brady on his day has been as good as, like, there are players in the NFL right now who, any of whom can rock up and be as good as Patrick Mahomes. There's nobody that can do what Donald does. Nobody.
Yeah, that's pretty rare for even a quarterback to just be the best player from start to finish every year, year in, year out. I mean, it just doesn't really happen at that position, but we've seen it happen on the defensive line. With Watt for a short period of time, and then with Donald, as you're saying. PFF has partnered with Symbol, that's S-I-M-B-U-L-L, the stock market for sports that allows you to trade sports teams like stocks, earn cash payouts when your teams win. Symbol has blended sports and the stock market to offer you a new way to invest in and profit off your favorite teams. MLB is in full swing for the rest of the summer, so you can earn daily cash payouts. And there's still a few NFL stragglers in free agency that might be able to put your team over the top. So be sure to invest wisely. Use the promo code PFF. Deposit $10 at symbol.app/PFF to earn a free PFF annual subscription. That's promo code PFF with a $10 deposit at symbol.app/PFF to earn a free annual subscription. All right, let's get into Mahomes here. Over the last 3 years, the most valuable quarterback in the league, he's had only 3 years as a starter. When you're separating Mahomes from Brady and Rodgers, obviously age has to be a factor, and just the consistency that Mahomes has played with. 95 overall PFF grade over the last 3 years. That is the top number in the league.
The most big time throws as well. I think he's tied with Russell Wilson with that number. But also, you know, his play gets better in the playoffs. Like, Mahomes is one of those players where the harder
his... Except the Super Bowl.
Well, yeah.
Except the two Super Bowls.
Well, the first one, like, he was a pretty big part of.
In the fourth quarter.
Right, where it mattered. The point I was going to make is that, like, the more it seems to matter, the more Mahomes typically shows up. Obviously, you can neutralize that if you absolutely lay waste to his offensive line the way that the Bucs were able to do this Super Bowl. But generally speaking, like, the more disadvantageous the position that Mahomes finds himself in, the better he ends up playing. Whether it's third down, whether it's the playoffs, whether it's the fourth quarter, like, the tougher the situation, the better he is, which is the exact reverse of players like, you know, Kirk Cousins, for example. That being said, I think Kirk Cousins' fourth quarter numbers were insane, largely because of, you know, garbage time. But, you know, it's a thing, right? That idea of clutch that gets thrown around, that there isn't really a great definition for, whatever the definition is. Tom Brady obviously has had it for 20 years. Mahomes has it too.
It's interesting because in other sports, they try to downplay the value of clutch. But I think in football, as a quarterback, the thing we've talked about a lot is, as a quarterback, you kind of dictate your situations. There are positions on the field where you don't. Like Aaron Donald, again, as an example, doesn't dictate his situation. He is placed in a situation. He's placed at three technique, or he's placed at edge, and he's placed in a third and 10 or a first and 10 situation. But when you're the quarterback, and you play to the situation, so it's you have the ability to decide, essentially, when do I throw the ball down the field? When do I check down? When do I take more chances and all that stuff? And that's why I think the quarterback, the clutch concept in other sports, people are like, oh, you can't control when you hit a home run, or you can't control when you know, have a really good pass rush. That's true, but the quarterback does control that. So there is something to it, and I do think that's why Brady has been so special throughout his career. I just think it's an interesting dynamic when you're comparing quarterbacks to maybe other positions. So from a quarterback standpoint, we went Brady at 7 overall, and then Aaron Rodgers at 10. Trying to separate those guys. Rodgers did have a better grade than Brady last year. I think it honestly depends on, you know, how far you want to go back. Over the last 5 years, Brady's got the highest grade among all quarterbacks, just above Rodgers, 97 overall back to 2016. He's been the most valuable quarterback in the league by almost 4 wins over Aaron Rodgers. And from a physical standpoint, we don't really see Brady dropping off. And even last year when his stats were down in 2019, we said there wasn't anything physically different about him. So I think until we see that, you have to essentially buy in that Tom Brady is still
one of the best. I think Brady's like 5-6 years older than Rodgers, and yet you kind of talk about both of them in the same way in terms of, like, you know, neither guy is really showing signs of physical decline yet. Like, they're both in the area now where physical decline should be starting to happen, even though there's 5-6 years between them. That's how long Brady has been kicking Father Time's ass, that Rodgers is now, like, there as well. And neither one of them is showing any signs of physical decline.
If Rodgers has the same run that Brady's had since he was, what, 39, he'll get, you know, three Super Bowl wins and an MVP and
this is why,
a Super Bowl loss with 33 points all in that, you know, 5-year period from 39 to 43.
Which is why, like, if you're Green Bay and you're thinking about trying to trade him, like, you should theoretically still be looking at a giant haul of picks, because there's a world where he plays for another 5 years and, like, at an MVP caliber level, which is worth a hell of a lot in today's NFL.
Yeah, so, look, I think there was a legitimate debate trying to split up Brady and Rodgers, but Brady comes in at 7, just looking at quarterbacks, and Rodgers at 10, as I said. The other pretty healthy debate that we had, Sam, was how is the next non-quarterback off the list. We went Travis Kelce at 3, Chiefs tight end, Colts guard Quentin Nelson at 4, Devontae Adams, wide receiver from the Green Bay Packers at 5, and then Khalil Mack, edge defender from the Bears at 6. I think Kelce, Nelson, and Adams, I think there was points where we were looking through this list and all three of them could have been number 3 on the list, and this will be the theme of this, right? Splitting hairs between one guy versus the next.
Splitting hairs, and also how you weight the information. Like, in today's NFL, recency bias is everything, right? So there's going to be players that aren't on this list that were fantastic last year, And everybody's going to be, well, how can you not have this guy ranked, you know, in the top 50? He was a top 10, 20, 30 player last season. He's not there. That's the last thing we saw. But we know better than that. We know that just because a guy was fantastic last year doesn't mean you're going to get the same thing next year, particularly when there are some obvious signs that it was kind of an outlier year or bound for regression. But once you've accepted that, it becomes a lot more complicated in terms of, well, what does matter? How much do you value a great year 2 years ago or a great year 3 years ago? Or, you know, what sort of what breakdown of those proportions and all those kinds of things?
Injuries, so, roles, there's right. a lot of things that come into it. Yeah.
So Davante Adams is a good example. Like this most recent season, Davante Adams was the best wide receiver in the NFL. He's been arguably the best route running receiver for years. Everything else in his game kind of came together. But this was a career year for him and like a significant step forward from what we'd seen in the past. So do you assume this is him now? Like he's now in that Julio Jones category of the best wide receiver in the NFL from now on until he starts to decline? Or was this a high watermark? Does the tide go out a little bit and you start to see more of a Davante Adams from the previous couple of years? And this is the same kind of conversation with every one of these guys. You know, Khalil Mack has had a couple of relative down years, but then bounces back a little bit. So do you give Khalil Mack credit for rediscovering his best form? The whole thing is very difficult when you're talking about splitting hairs between players that are all great.
Yeah, but I think part of it is what you said initially on Donald is when you compare to your peers, comparing Davante Adams to his peers is more difficult because there are some There's a slew of really good receivers. We've talked about this for a while, whether it's the nature of the position or just the way the NFL's going. When you're picking out elite receivers or true number ones, you can go 15 or 20 deep in the NFL. When you talk about tight ends, how many times have we said on the show, there's Kelce, Kittle, Waller, and maybe Kyle Pitts now. I mean, that's it as far as tight ends. And then so Kelce got the nod at three because he was just so incredible last year.
Yeah.
It's nice playing with Mahomes, certainly, but you know Kelce's ability to just be a mismatch as a receiver. Remember what he did to Denzel Ward, one of the best cover corners, one of the best corners in the NFL, and just making him look foolish. Nobody can really cover Travis Kelce.
Right, and the fact that Denzel Ward was on him at all was it sort of tells you something about the state that he had gotten to in terms of teams trying to defend him. Like teams went through the spectrum of everybody they had on defense to try and find somebody that could actually match up with Travis Kelce. Like typically you're not going to see your number one cover corner match up with a tight end. It just doesn't happen, particularly when your number one cover corner is not built like Jalen Ramsey. You know, like you can definitely make the case that, hey, Jalen Ramsey is a huge physical specimen of corner. He is unusually well suited to be dealing with a freak receiving tight end. So that makes sense. But like Denzel Ward is not built like Jalen Ramsey. Denzel Ward is just the best cover guy that the Browns had. So they gave it a shot and it didn't work any better than any other position. Like Denzel Ward found himself face first in the turf while Travis Kelce was skidding into the end zone as if Ward was a linebacker or a safety or any other position. So that's how devastating Kelce was last year. Teams were A, trying to find guys to cover him, including their number one corners, and B, failing, even when they did try that.
With Kelce, of course, too, there's been healthy debate between him and George Kittle. I think that's the other thing we even though we're looking forward, you kind of have to factor in here. Kittle has been banged up a little bit. Kittle is probably a better all-around player. Last year at this time, I think we did have Kittle higher on the list because his run blocking plus receiving ability, just incredible. I would say if there's an advantage for Kittle, this is going to sound ridiculous, right? He has Kyle Shanahan. Well, Travis Kelce, of course, has Andy Reid. But I think the way they're used, Kittle, not a knock on Kittle, he is more a part of Shanahan's system, which does a really good job of creating open throws, getting guys open, particularly tight ends. Whereas Kelce is a mismatch creator that Andy Reid, Eric Bieniemy, the Kansas City Chiefs use. And I think that's one way to separate those guys. So while Kittle gets the advantage from a run blocking versatility standpoint, I think the fact that Kittle lines up more outside and in the slot and all over the formation and does invite guys like Denzel Ward to cover him more than a George Kittle does, I think gives Kelce that slight nod there, especially in the way Kelce peaked last year as a as a receiver. I mean, he was unstoppable.
I mean, he peaked at the same time as George Kittle had an injury blighted season, right, which sort of explains them splitting a little bit. But yeah, there is.
By the way, Kittle came in at ninth, so we weren't knocking him. He came in at ninth.
There is, though, a very subtle difference that is, it's difficult to articulate, but it's probably quite important between. They're both in an offense that is very good and has one of the best play callers and play designers in the NFL working to get them the ball. The difference between the two is that Kyle Shanahan is very good at creating these plays that cause defenses problems and therefore spring a guy open on the back end. So, you know, these wide zone play actions with a bunch of fakes off the back end of it. And then, oh, look, there's a tight end leaking behind it going the other way, who's now wide open 20 yards downfield. Get it to Kittle. Now the guy's got the ball in his hands with space, and he can destroy the guys left remaining and rumble for 50. But the fact that he was 10 yards wide open in the first place is a huge thing that most tight ends don't get to play with. Now, the other end, you've got Travis Kelce with Andy Reid. Now, he schemed up a lot as well. Remember, Travis Kelce is the guy that catches a lot of those shovel screens, you know, those sort of weird plays down in the red zone where it's just a flick from Mahomes to Travis Kelce, and it's like it's a free receiving touchdown, essentially, right? All Kelce had to do was catch the ball, dive into a gap, 2 yards, boom, receiving touchdown. But the fact he gets... Essentially,
that's all Mahomes, by the way, on those
of course
well-placed shovel passes.
So they're great play designs. They're schemed up, but they're sort of designed so that, okay, we just get the ball in Travis Kelce's hands and give him the chance to make a play, as opposed to Kittle, where the play has already kind of been made by the time he gets to it, and then you're relying on Kittle to like add the cherry on top to the play.
That's a good,
because of what he can do.
That's a good way of distinguishing it. There is a difference between schemed up, get it in this guy's hands because he's so good.
Yes.
Versus like Shanahan out-schemes the defense, right? He creates open throws by moving defenders, not so much putting the ball in. I mean, he puts it in guys' hands to create. Shanahan
creates a lot of plays where anybody could be on the receiving end and it would be a good play anyway. And then Kittle gets to add value on top of it because he's a great receiver. After the catch with the ball in his hands, like, he adds a bunch to that, particularly, and he's, you know, he's a part of the blocking scheme as well, which only enhances it. Whereas Andy Reid is really good at figuring out how to maximize the number of times you get the ball in Travis Kelce's hands, right? Regardless, a player as good as he is would be taken out of the game more than he is in most offenses. But Reid is really good at neutralizing that and making it really hard for you to take Travis Kelce out of the game. So there's a sort of, I think they both benefit massively from the offensive system that they're in, but there's a subtle difference in how that impacts them. And I think one leans a little bit more on the skill set of the guy to make it work.
I think it's good to discuss the position battles, so to speak. So again, Kelce at 3, Kittle at 9. The fourth overall player on the board, Quentin Nelson. So he's interesting when you compare him to Patrick Mahomes, right? Because we said, hey, Mahomes he's the consensus top quarterback, in part because of age and just how good he's been at the beginning of his career. Quentin Nelson's the same. But Quentin Nelson has never actually ranked in a season as the top graded guard. And Patrick Mahomes has never ranked as the top graded quarterback in any of his three seasons. Even his MVP caliber season, Drew Brees graded higher than him. But Mahomes was the most valuable receiver quarterback that year. But even over the last couple of years, Mahomes has not had the number one ranking. But it's when you take that body of work. We have three full seasons of Mahomes as starter. We have three seasons of Quentin Nelson in the NFL. An 81.6 grade as a rookie, which is exceptional for a guard. A 91.2 grade in 2019 and 87.5 grade in 2020. We haven't seen that level of consistency from a guard. And then I think at tackle, it's maybe just Joe Thomas, you know, through PFF history. Offensive linemen that have graded that well that early in their career. So Quentin Nelson and Zach Martin, I think, are the two guys kind of battling for that top spot at guard. And Quentin Nelson gets the nod from us based off those first three seasons.
Yeah, and Nelson was second in that 2019 season where he had the 91 grade. It was just
I'm just saying he's been like second or third, right, the last couple of years, but he just hasn't had that number one ranking, even though he's the best guard in the NFL, total body of work-wise.
Yeah, and certainly when you look at, like, the guys that have popped up and had that number one great, like Brandon Brooks then blew out his Achilles or whatever it was he went down with, plus he's getting up in years. Yeah, I think Nelson is the clear, obvious answer, and then Zach Martin is right behind him as the one guy who hasn't really suffered any kind of drop-off on that Dallas offensive line. Everything else has kind of crumbled around him. Zach Martin even had to kick out to right tackle for a couple of games last season, held up pretty well until he eventually got injured and went down as well.
Both guys, hashtag fun to watch. Keep an eye on that one, fun to watch. But Quentin Nelson absolutely destroys people in the run game. Zone blocking, has the quicks to do it all. Pass protection, really smooth, even against some of the better interior defensive linemen. There's a whole highlight reel of Quentin Nelson just destroying people as, you know, essentially helping in pass protection, not even when he's one-on-one. He's just got a good feel for it. And as you like to always say, Quentin Nelson's, you know, he's been destined to be a first-round guard since we first saw him as a redshirt freshman at Notre Dame. So having him at four, makes a lot of sense. Zach Martin at 13.
He's also got the smarts and awareness that some other players don't have. Like, there's multiple plays where he picks up a guy that shouldn't be anything to do with him. A late rusher on the blitz that's going to kill the quarterback, and Nelson is able to see it coming, know that he can sort of bail from his original guy and just torpedo this dude, take him out of the play just by the quarterback, A, enough time to get rid of the ball, and B, you know, buy him life for the next play in a way that, like, those are plays that they're really small things in terms of there's maybe like two of them a year. But each one of those is a play that could potentially destroy your quarterback and that most players aren't even making. And not only that, but you're not criticizing them for not making them, right? Like, you're not supposed to make that play. It's not a play that you're not even going to notice if insert random guard here doesn't make that play. Like, Joe Tooney doesn't make that play, doesn't even think about making that play, and nobody criticizes him for it. He's not supposed to make the play.
Right.
The fact that Nelson sees that and is able to make that play is like a different level of awareness and sort of ability and processing that may be unique to him at that position in today's NFL.
One other way to quantify it, too, as far as Nelson goes, I did that little pre-free agency study on the Colts, right? What do they do? Do they move Quentin Nelson to left tackle or keep him at left guard? And when you go through how many wins you're going to add to your team, it took, if you were going to move Nelson to left tackle, he's so good at guard, it was going to take essentially a really, really good replacement guard, or it's going to take a really good tackle as they lose Anthony Costanzo to just like break even with what Quentin Nelson plus Anthony Costanzo brought to the table. So it was really difficult to justify moving Quentin Nelson because you've got him locked in essentially as the most valuable guard in the league. And when you are that much better, again, comparing to your peers, when you are that much better, there's that level of comfort that is extremely valuable when you're projecting players going forward. It's too bad Quentin Nelson can't earn fantasy points for you. But if you like fantasy football, and if you like playing fantasy for money, you need to check out Underdog Fantasy. Underdog's got everything, including season-long and playoff best ball. Best ball is a season-long game where you draft a team like you normally do, but that's it. There's no in-season roster management. Underdog automatically selects your best performers each week, saving you loads of time. Go to Underdog Fantasy and deposit $10 using the promo code PFF and get a free PFF Edge annual subscription. It's promo code PFF. Draft now at Underdog Fantasy. All right, so Nelson at 4. Zach Martin at 13 when you're splitting up the guards. We mentioned Devontae Adams at 5. Can we just celebrate Khalil Mack, number 6 on the list, for a couple minutes here? Like you said, it feels like, and again, sack-wise, 9 sacks by our numbers in 2019, 10 last year in 2020. Nothing breathtaking when it comes to Khalil Mack. But he had, in even just his pressure totals last year, 59. It was actually the lowest we've seen from him since his rookie season. But he had a number of those quick wins, those, you know, quick win that does not lead to a pressure. So that's all being quantified. Even though he wasn't getting to the quarterback as much last year, he's also been as elite of a run defender as we've seen on the edge. And I think the biggest compliment for Khalil Mack is, remember when Von Miller came out and every year you'd have a prospect compared to Von Miller? And it's like, come on, guys. Von Miller is good at everything. Stop comparing people to Von Miller. Stop comparing people to J.J. Watt. Well, Khalil Mack has essentially earned that Von Miller comp through the years. And him and Von were just neck and neck when it came to grading. Vaughn's battled injuries and a not so great 2019 season. So Mac has vaulted above him and is now, I think, that top edge with, you know, TJ Watt and a few other guys maybe on his heels.
Yeah. So over the last 5 years, last season, 2020 was the lowest number of total pressures that Khalil Mack has had, even if you include plays nullified by penalty. But it's the second best win percentage of his career because he had 45 of those.
45, all right. So those are the ones that are
45 of those quick plays that don't get to become pressure, which is like 20 more than any other season in the last 5 years by him.
And just and so those are plays where he could absolutely whoop somebody, and then there's either it could be the Quentin Nelson double team. Someone else is coming to pick him up, right? So Khalil Mack's essentially doing his job and drawing a double team based off the win. Or the pass is just getting out quick.
Yeah, I mean, the best examples are like, look, the quarterback is working the other side of the field. You know, so Khalil Mack whoops the left tackle, is bearing down on the quarterback, but the quarterback's working the right side of the field, and the pass is open. So the ball's out before Mack gets a chance to hit the quarterback. And because the quarterback was working the other side of the field, he never even knew it was coming. So it's not pressure, right? You can't credit Mack for a pressure on the play, because the quarterback was never under pressure. He had no idea that he was a second from death by Khalil Mack bearing down from behind him. But it's a clear pass rush win for Khalil Mack versus the left tackle. So we have these play types that we're able to credit him for that pass rush win without putting it down as a pressure that skews other numbers in terms of quarterback performance and those kinds of things.
Let's stick with this position theme then. So with edge defenders, we have Khalil Mack at 6. TJ Watt, the next edge off the board in the PFF 50 at 11. And then we've got, where am I going? It was Joey Bosa. He's not from the San Francisco. I typed in San Francisco 49ers next to his name. What an idiot.
Big mistake.
Joey Bosa, not Nick. And then he's at 21. And then Myles Garrett at 25. So,
say what else? DeAndre Hopkins doesn't play for the Houston Texans either.
No, he doesn't. Well, I did a bad job here. Yeah, fix that for me in our little spreadsheet here. So there'll be other edges off the board. Nick Bosa came in at 27. By the way, this is all over at PFF.com. It was revealed all last week on the website. Your thoughts on those edges going forward? TJ Watt has really emerged these last couple years. Joey Bosa, just like separating him from Nick Bosa has been difficult, but Nick's injury last year, you know, and Joey's consistency has been incredible. And then Myles Garrett, you know, he's another Von Miller type. You know, he's lived up to that hype. So it's a high-end edge rushers around the league. It's a good time for that position.
Yeah, I mean, TJ Watt is the other guy, I think, up there with Khalil Mack in terms of very real argument to say he's the best edge defender in the NFL, not just edge rusher. Back-to-back seasons with a PFF grade above 91, which is pretty crazy. Last year, he had a run defense grade of 90 as well. He's got 3 interceptions over the past couple of years, right? There's a play where he, you know, read a quick pass by Daniel Jones and got his way underneath it. Like edge rushers aren't supposed to do that. But
Tony Brackens used to do that all the time.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's the Steelers' defensive scheme, so he has to drop into coverage a little bit more than those guys, or at least be more aware of that type of pass than those other guys. He's got, what, 115 or so coverage snaps over the past couple of seasons for the Steelers.
And credit the Steelers, though, because they've cut down on that number. Early in his career, he dropped into coverage a lot more. They've cut down on that number. We've seen Watt's production rise quite a bit as far as
pass rushing goes. Gone from 185, 131, and then 50, 60.
Yeah, but even like when he does drop into coverage, he's pretty solid at it. I mean, you don't have massive responsibility when you do. You play curl flat, you play the short little zone, keep the ball in front of you, but he's even solid at that. And that, you know, because he does drop a little bit more than some of these other guys, it could potentially hurt his pass rush production. But ask JJ, he thinks TJ is the best edge in the league.
Well, of course he does.
JJ's a big fan of TJ.
Yes, the Watts, I think, are very good at bigging up the other Watts.
Yeah. So TJ Watt, he's emerged. He's been fantastic. Myles Garrett has continued to improve. So again, Myles Garrett's at 25. And then again, Joey Bosa at 21. When you talk about those guys, they are the classic examples of dominated in college, dominated in the NFL. I mean, if you look at Joey Bosa's career, he's got one anomaly. 2018, only played 427 snaps, had a 71 grade. But other than that, it's 86, 88, 89. And then last year was actually Joey Bosa's highest grade in his career, 90.2 overall. excellent run defender, really good pass rusher. How many times have we said don't necessarily look at the sack totals? Only 8 by our numbers last year, but 61 total pressures, and this was all only on 350 rushes last year. A lot of other guys like Watt had over 530. So you give Joey Bosa another 150, 180 pass rushes, and you know, you see that production go up. Joey Bosa's been really consistent.
Yeah, and he also has that. I think there's a little bit of a boost to him in terms of the versatility he has to play as a true edge rusher versus a guy that can kick inside a little bit and be more of a kind of interior 3-4 end type of player. Joey Bosa has incredible consistency and versatility that some of these other guys don't necessarily have. He's just good at everything.
I think when you're listing these guys, though, I don't want to say splitting hairs again, but if any of these guys are the top edge defender this year, are you surprised?
No.
Nick Bosa.
Myles Garrett's a great example. Like, Myles Garrett has now had 2 seasons of pass rushing grades above 90. Now, okay, one of them was only half a year because he brained Mason Rudolph with his helmet and missed half the season. But he's had back-to-back years with like a 90-plus grade, and it still feels like there's more to come from Myles Garrett. Like, it still feels like there's a better year from Myles Garrett to come. Like, he was 90 grade last season and got COVID, wasn't quite the same guy for a period of the season, missed half the year of the year before with suspension. It feels like Myles Garrett is just sort of on the brink of putting together a season that would be like one of the best we've seen amongst edge rushers since we've been grading things, but hasn't quite got there yet. So he still needs to like jump over guys like TJ Watt and Khalil Mack that have been at that level, even the Joey Bosa and Nick Bosa. Nick Bosa, we've still only seen 1 year from. We've only seen rookie Nick Bosa, and it was good enough to be ranked in this conversation. Like, that guy broke the rookie record for total pressures in a season. Didn't just break it,
over
like
80
shattered
pressures.
It. The previous total, I think, was 62 by Aldon Smith. So he's like 18 higher than the best we've ever seen, and was still like motoring by the Super Bowl. Like, he had 12 pressures in the Super Bowl. So he was playing the best football. Like, you know, we talk about the rookie wall. Players typically like fall off in December or certainly January. Nick Bosa was like cranking it up by the time the Super Bowl rolled around.
Yeah, so he's another one, just like Kittle of the Niners, probably gets dropped a little bit because, you know, you let some other guys pass you, the injury factor. But again, if Nick Bosa ends up as a top 10 player on this list a year from now, that wouldn't be surprising. He's at 27, but we'll talk about him later in the week. So edge defender has a bunch of representation in that top 25. Bobby Wagner, again, who we mentioned, will be on in a little bit. Bobby Wagner at 8 overall, the best linebacker in the league. It was just Bobby Wagner and it was Luke Kuechly. There's a debate about Fred Warner, maybe, from the San Francisco 49ers, coming off of an incredible year there. But we have Warner at 20, but Bobby Wagner holds the crown as the top linebacker in the league, 8th overall on this list.
Yeah, and I think this is a good example where just body of work and sample size and all those kinds of things just stand in his favor. Fred Warner was fantastic last season, looks like one of the best, arguably the best coverage linebacker in the NFL, but he just doesn't have the body of work that Bobby Wagner has, who has been 1 or 2 or 3 in terms of the best linebacker in the NFL basically for his entire career. And the guys he's been vying with have been Luke Kuechly, who was, you know, an all-time great, Lavonte David, who's right up there as well. That's the kind of category that Bobby Wagner has been in. And the job around him has been getting harder and harder over the years because the rest of that defense has been sort of deteriorating and disintegrating. So for Wagner to still be as good as he is, despite not having the rest of that Legion of Boom defense around him now, I think, again, only enhances his case.
We've talked a million times, and we're going to talk to him about how difficult it is to play linebacker in the league. But it's also difficult to just be good at everything a linebacker is asked to do.
Yeah.
And using PFF grades, the 3 facets of play, run defense, coverage, and then pass rushing. And that's where Wagner, because of a lack of pass rush in Seattle the last couple of years, has been asked to blitz a lot more. There were games where he blitzed 20 times. So the last couple of years, 91 times, 110 times. That's not common. That's a big jump, almost double what he had done in previous seasons just from a pass rushing standpoint. And he's graded in the 80s both times. So he's always graded well as a run defender, graded well as a coverage player, graded well as a pass rusher. That level of consistency that Bobby Wagner brings to the table certainly puts him at the top. Much like what Luke Kuechly did for the Carolina Panthers when he was healthy. I think those guys are clearly the top two guys of the last decade when it comes to linebacker play.
Yep.
We've talked about Kittle, Rodgers, T.J. Watt. The only running back in the top 25, right, is Derrick Henry. We've got a couple other running backs who make it in the second half of the top 50, but Derrick Henry continues to buck that trend, right? I mean, you expect some regression. You expect, you know, there's an offensive line overhaul last year in Tennessee. They were a good run-blocking team, don't get me wrong. They still put him in a pretty good position, but he's averaging over 4 yards per attempt after contact. Yep. After contact. There were running backs around the league averaging just 3.9 yards per attempt overall, and Derrick Henry's averaging 4 after contact per rush over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, it's regardless of how important you think running backs are, it's very difficult to argue with the kind of production that Derrick Henry has put up, particularly because like the Titans have not had the clear best run-blocking offensive line in the NFL for the last 2 years, which would explain some of that away if you were looking at that and saying, yeah, well, of course he's got great numbers. Look at the line he's running behind. Like, this was a little bit of the Ezekiel Elliott thing for a while. Yeah, of course Zeke's doing really well and looks great. Look at that Dallas offensive line. Like, Henry hasn't had that. The Titans offensive line has been good. It's not like it's been a problem or holding him back or something he's had to fight against, but it doesn't explain his numbers. So at some point you have to look at Henry's production and say, okay, that's just pretty crazy.
Yeah, I mean, that was Marshawn Lynch, right, throughout much of his run with Seattle, where you would separate him from the offensive line and say, okay, Marshawn Lynch is doing a lot of the work here. That's absolutely the difference between like Zeke Elliott and Todd Gurley when he was on a roll. Todd Gurley's career has gone directly proportional to what his offensive line has done. Zeke isn't that extreme, but as a one-cut runner that needs a little bit of space, you know, Zeke does depend on that offensive line. Henry is the guy who not only is able to create after contact, much like a Nick Chubb. I think they're similar as runners, the Browns running back. But Henry definitely has those games where he takes over, too. I mean, he's got those freak runs late. There's something to his durability. There's something to his, we always joked about the body blows thing and his ability. Yeah, but there is something about trying to tackle this 250-pound monster who stays fresh in the fourth quarter and has that breakaway speed as well. So I think that's what has separated Henry as a runner these last couple of years.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a case of like it wears down a defense and, you know, in the fourth quarter is where the body blows start to have an impact. I think it's just when you're dealing with a guy that's that size and 250 pounds, you're not going to bat 1,000 in terms of tackling him and in terms of stopping those big plays. So eventually they're going to happen. And if they happen in the fourth quarter, it becomes remembered and it's definitive. And it's, you know, it becomes that, hey, look, the body blows finally started to take. But those probably happen in the first quarter just as often, and you just don't notice it, or they're not remembered as much because it didn't sway the outcome of the game with 8 minutes to go in the first quarter. It swayed the outcome of the game when it happens with 4 minutes left in the entire game, and that puts the Titans up in a lead they didn't relinquish. You know what I mean? It's just a sort of situational thing, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I remember him. I remember him stiff-arming Earl Thomas in a playoff game and running 68
yards. Not just
yards.
Stiff-arming him, using Earl Thomas as his own lead blocker.
Yes.
Like, he got him turned around and was, like, using it. It was like, you know, Nelson in The Simpsons, where he, like, picks up Bart and is, like, literally using him to fend off the other kids. That's what Derrick Henry did to Earl Thomas.
That deserves merit in the PFF 50. That's why Henry comes in at number 12. Let's talk cornerback here. Jaire Alexander is the top cornerback on the list at 14. Jalen Ramsey, though, is a couple spots behind at 16. There was a point in the NFL where, you know, again, years ago, because, you know, we're old here. We've been at PFF over 10 years each year. We were sitting here debating Darrelle Revis, Richard Sherman, guys who did, and they were the clear top two corners in the NFL for quite a while. They're still debating it on Twitter, right? They still are attacking each other. But they both played different games, right? They, you know, Darrelle Revis played man, and Sherman played that off cover three with a little bit of press here and there. It is tough right now, I think the last couple of years, to say who are the definitive top cornerbacks, because coming into last year, it had been Stephon Gilmore. And he had an average season last year, below average season, really, and dropped completely off the PFF 50. And so now Jaire Alexander was a top-rated corner last year, top grade. But Jalen Ramsey is asked to do some different things with the Rams. I don't think he was as good as the perception was. because we've talked about like hidden plays. Ramsey got whooped by DK Metcalf a couple times where there was just overthrows that just don't show up in the stats. But I think there's a healthy debate between Jaire Alexander and Jalen Ramsey.
I think Jalen Ramsey is, so if your analogy it was Sherman versus Revis, I think Jalen Ramsey is the Patrick Peterson of that equation, which is a guy whose job is definitely harder than almost any other cornerback in the NFL in terms of responsibility, in terms of assignments. What they ask him to do is more difficult than anybody else. So you need to credit him with that beyond the grade, right? So Jalen Ramsey's PFF grade last year was in the 70s. It wasn't right up there with Jaire, you know, 90 plus or wherever he was. 70s was 2019. Where was he this year? Jalen Ramsey, it was still the 70s, 79.8, almost 80.
Yep.
So it's a step behind the Jaire Alexanders of the world with a 90 plus grade, but he had a harder job. Undisputed fact that Jalen Ramsey's gig last year was harder than Jaire Alexander's. But there's always a bit as well where, okay, we're a little bit lower than the perception because of that difficulty in his job description. On the other hand, the perception's a little bit off as well because you're not remembering all these plays that we're factoring in. So I think it exactly like Patrick Peterson, the truth is somewhere in the middle between raw overall PFF grade and like the hype machine, which is like, oh, Patrick Peterson is every bit as good as Richard Sherman. I don't think Patrick Peterson was ever as good as Richard Sherman, to be honest, but I will absolutely admit that Patrick Peterson had a harder job or had a more difficult assignment most of the time than Richard Sherman did.
And you're earning that assignment because you're really, really good.
Right. You're not getting it because you suck, right? You're getting the more difficult assignment for a reason, which is why you have to sort of credit him back for that.
Using PFF WAR, wins above replacement, Jaire Alexander has been the most valuable corner in the league over the last 3 years. So what he's brought to the table, now he's going to be playing, I think this will be interesting as well, he's going to be playing in the same scheme that Jalen Ramsey played last year. They're bringing the Brandon Staley scheme that's going across the NFL, right? That Fangio tree. We'll call it the Fangio tree. Fangio to Brandon Staley. Now, elements of that are going to Green Bay. We saw Jalen Ramsey move around a little bit. Ramsey is an excellent zone defender too, right? I mean, he had all those skills at Florida State. He was a safety initially at Florida State, played in the slot there and played outside. So he's got zone skills and a press man body. They're talking about Jalen Ramsey. So the Rams tapped into that a little bit in a zone-heavy scheme where certain times he'd line up in the slot. They play zone. He'd line up outside. They did it all. I want to see how the Packers deployed Jaire. Not the same body type, not the same physicality, but a good all-around skill set. Jaire's ball skills are really good. He could play man. He could play zone. He could do it all. Could be a nice season for Jaire, or just have a lot more on his plate in general with the way Green Bay plays defense.
Should we add to this? Go a step further in professionalism and give a little rundown of the 50 so far. What do they call it? A reset. Is that what they call it?
A little reset.
All right. Aaron Donald, Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, Quentin Nelson, Devontae Adams, top five. Khalil Mack, Tom Brady, Bobby Wagner, friend of the show, upcoming, hopefully. George Kittle and Aaron Rodgers, your top 10. TJ Watt, Derrick Henry, Zach Martin, Jaire Alexander, David Bakhtiari, the guy we haven't mentioned yet in the top. That's your top 15. And then we're on to Jalen Ramsey at 16.
Great. That was a good rundown.
Right.
All right. So that's our corner.
I've seen pros do that. That's how they do it.
That's very well done. We're just scratching the surface of professionalism for
always.
The fourth straight year. So those are the two corners that make the top 25. Let's talk Bakhtiari at 15. Again, this is why PFF exists, to highlight people like David Bakhtiari, to say, hey, look, this is the best pass protecting tackle in the NFL right now.
And does he appreciate it?
Does he?
I don't think so.
Probably.
Certainly not enough. I mean, look.
Joe Thomas did.
He did.
Joe did.
Still does. Friend of the show.
Yeah. I mean, we helped Joe Thomas's Hall of Fame case.
We're what pushes Joe Thomas's Hall of Fame credentials.
Well, think
over
about
the
difference, right? So Joe Thomas is a slam dunk first ballot Hall of Famer, right?
Yes.
Off of perception. But then you can always just go to PFF and say, look, we've been grading since 06.
So, yeah.
And he started in 07. We have his entire career graded. You can at least confirm that. Marquise Pouncey is also potentially a slam dunk, surefire Hall of Famer. And you might be able to go check his PFF grades and say, okay, wait a second.
Yeah.
Second thought here.
Look.
Sorry, Marquise.
I think both those players essentially highlight that we don't matter in those discussions to that extent. Joe Thomas is going to the Hall of Fame, whether PFF was around or not. Marquise Pouncey is going to the Hall of Fame despite PFF being around and pointing out the idiocy of that candidate, candidacy. The player I think that we might have actually moved the needle on eventually when it rolls around to that is Andrew Whitworth.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Marshall Yanda.
No, but Yanda might be a good one.
But he's
one
another
as well.
One, yeah.
So Whitworth in particular, I mean, this was a dude who was, what, a mid-round pick? Am I remembering that right? Was he a third-round guy or something?
Let me find out.
Mid-round pick, drafted as a guard because people didn't think that he had the footwork and the skills, the quickness to play outside a tackle.
Second round. 2006.
Started off a guard, got moved out to tackle. Remember, the Bengals had that great pair of tackles, Willie Anderson and whoever the other guy was, that whose name is escaping me right now.
Anthony Munoz?
No. But they had a great pair of tackles. So Whitworth started off a guard, moved out to tackle, and then lo and behold, turns out he's amazing at tackle anyway. But didn't have like the jump start that Joe Thomas had in terms of, we know he's going to be amazing, so as soon as we see it, it's confirmation and we're done. Whitworth had to like earn this respect as being one of the best tackles in the NFL.
Yeah, Whitworth's been fantastic. Marshall Yanda has been fantastic. Maybe we will help there. But I like to think we've helped David Bakhtiari. He has been the best pass-protecting tackle in the league, so we're respecting that by putting him at number 15. I think there's a healthy wide receiver debate as well, Sam. DeAndre Hopkins at 17, Tyreek Hill at 18, and there's a whole bunch that end up in the second half of the PFF 50. Did we get that right? Devontae Adams, DeAndre Hopkins, and Tyreek Hill.
Of course we did, because that's the list we did.
Of course we did.
Levi Jones, by the way, the other Bengals.
Ah, Levi, yes.
Wide receiver is a really tough position to rank because you can go pretty deep in terms of wide receivers and get a guy who, again, any given year could easily be the number one wide receiver in the NFL. Like Devontae Adams took the jump last year from the rest of this group to being the number one guy. Julio Jones for years has been the number one wide receiver in the NFL. Took a step back with injuries. Who knows where he'll be? DeAndre Hopkins has been the best receiver in the NFL. Tyreek Hill is, I think, the most dangerous receiver in the NFL in terms of any given play. He can torch you for a touchdown. Allen Robinson has been a top 10, top 5 guy despite never having a quarterback. Like, what happens if Justin Fields is incredible and suddenly Allen Robinson looks like the best receiver in the NFL because he's finally got a guy that can get him the ball somewhere in the vicinity of where he is?
We'll talk on Thursday too. Are we too harsh on Julio Jones?
Yeah.
After one down year and some injuries. And look, are we too harsh on these injured guys?
A.J. Brown is suddenly going to have a season where Julio Jones is on the other side of him and doesn't have to deal with coverage being rolled in his direction and all those kinds of things. A.J. Brown, as incredible as he's been in his first couple of years, could be even better year three. Michael Thomas is fairly low down the list because, you know, he had a down year and injuries and all those kinds of things. Michael Thomas has been one of the best receivers in the NFL.
Yeah, I think when you're looking at Devontae being the top guy, I mean, he was just uncoverable in the red zone. I mean, he's uncoverable everywhere. But, I mean, a touchdown-making machine last year. There were points in Adams' career where it's like the other team knows he's going to get peppered with targets. The Packers' complementary receivers, they're better than they seemed a year ago, but maybe elevated a little bit by Aaron Rodgers, but Devontae Adams has been that guy. DeAndre Hopkins has gone through a few years of that, essentially, with Houston. When Will Fuller was out there, fine, but there was a lot of times Will Fuller wasn't out there,
yep.
And you just go right to DeAndre Hopkins. And I think it's that multiple years of production for Hopkins that put him as wide receiver 2 on this list, 17 overall. I could see a changing of the guard a little bit as they, you know, as Hopkins and some other guys get older. I still think as far as the skill set I want on my team more than anyone else, it's Tyreek Hill. You know, your point about if you just made him a straight up slot receiver all the time, or you just made him a deep threat, he could do it all and produce incredibly. And you know, nobody has to be accounted for more than Tyreek Hill. You can't leave him. You literally can't leave him one-on-one, not because it's going to be a first down, but because it'll be a touchdown. So Tyreek Hill is the third wide receiver on this list, but still my pick for the guy I want to start my receiving core with.
Yeah, I mean, again, I just think wide receiver is such a tricky position to rank because of how much it fluctuates year to year and because of how good all of those guys are.
So Hopkins is at 17. Tyreek Hill is at 18. At 19, Chris Jones, Tyreek Hill's teammate, Kansas City Chiefs. He's the second interior defensive lineman on this list. The third one's going to be Cameron Hayward coming in at 31. We'll talk about him on Thursday, but Chris Jones has become that guy, right? With the the annual debate. Hayward's still in that debate. I think Fletcher Cox has dropped off. The annual debate, who's the next guy behind Aaron Donald? But Chris Jones has been incredibly consistent these last 3 years.
Yeah, and I think the fact that he's ranked 19th is, like, he might be hard done by there because he gets stung with the context of, like, Aaron Donald, right? Aaron Donald out on this
world.
Like,
you have to separate the two.
Yeah, well, so the gap between Aaron Donald and the rest of the players at his position is one of the things that ranks Aaron Donald number one on the list and ahead of the likes of Patrick Mahomes and anybody else that's the clear best player at their position. But it probably also means we underrate how good a player like Chris Jones or Cameron Hayward are, because if you take Aaron Donald out of the league, those guys are dominant interior forces that are good at everything and, you know, would be the best player at their position. Like, the difference between Chris Jones and Davante Adams, say, is it a big one? You know, if you eliminate Aaron Donald as the context we're talking about here.
No, it's not.
Like, Chris Jones in any other period of the NFL would be held up as a perfectly acceptable best interior, like, best defensive tackle in the league, right? If you went to 2004 and said Chris Jones is there, he's the best defensive tackle in football, it wouldn't look ridiculous. Like, that would be entirely acceptable. So we probably ding him a little bit too much, and not just him, but the likes of Cameron Hayward, etc., because they get constantly compared to Aaron Donald, and that's just harsh to anybody.
Donald skewing everything for us. But, you know, Jones comes in at 19. We mentioned Fred Warner, linebacker, coming in at 20. He's become that athletic middle linebacker that can do it all. And I think he had showed flashes early in his career, but Warner took a big step forward last year. The production started to match what he's capable of. And again, in a league where good linebacker play is tough to come by, Fred Warner looks like he could be the guy that becomes the next Bobby Wagner that we're annually talking about as maybe the best linebacker in the league.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Fred Warner, the only thing keeping him this low on the list, I think, is sample size and making sure that he backs it up next year. And it's not just that 1 year of a new high watermark for his play.
The difference between Warner and, say, a Bobby Wagner or a Luke Kuechly has always been the missed tackles, though. Warner had 16 as a rookie, 22 in his second year in 2019. This includes the playoffs. And then he did cut it down to 10 last year. He's had a lot of attempts during that time, but those are the things. Like, Wagner has had seasons where he's had 3 and 1,
yeah,
right? And Kuechly's had single-digit missed tackle seasons, if I recall. Let me double-check. But Warner definitely a lot higher than some of those other top linebackers through the years.
Yeah, which probably makes sense just in terms of where he's come from. You know, that overhang college position where you're out in space, you're dealing with lighter, smaller players, you're not having to make these consistent tackles in the box against, you know, running backs with a head of steam coming at you the whole way.
Yeah, Kuechly's 8-year career, was it? 78 total missed tackles. Warner has 48 in 3 seasons, just for perspective. Again, how good Luke Kuechly's been.
Yeah, Bobby Wagner has 76 since 2012. He has only 3 seasons with double-digit missed tackles.
Right, so that's one of those differences.
That's including the playoffs for Wagner.
Warner's one of those few guys that can handle, you know, single coverage against tight ends, getting depth in zone, doing a lot of those difficult things linebackers have to do. Let's wrap up this top 25. We mentioned Joey Bosa at 21. Russell Wilson's at 22. Justin Simmons, a safety from the Broncos, at 23. Trent Williams, offensive tackle from the San Francisco 49ers, at 24. And we had mentioned Myles Garrett, edge defender from the Browns, coming in at 25. Let's break down that 22 to 25 group, starting with Wilson. Russell Wilson's now the fourth quarterback on the list, coming in at 22. He'd be in the top 10 if he didn't have that second half collapse last year.
Way in the top 10. I mean, he would be right up there with Mahomes. That's the thing. Russell Wilson has probably been harmed by a stretch of play more than anybody else on this list, because that kind of collapse might be too strong a word, but the relative downswing of his production and play over the second half of the season was massive compared with where he'd been for, what, 2.5 years? Prior to that, like, you could make a case that Russell Wilson over those 2.5 years was the best quarterback in the NFL, better than Mahomes, better than Rodgers, better than Brady. But the decline was so alarming and steep and immediate and, like, concerning that it sort of shakes, like, the entire foundations of how good you think Russell Wilson is. Like, obviously he's still amazing, he's still a great quarterback, but now can you honestly hold him up alongside the likes of Mahomes and say, yeah, they're the same?
We have plenty of time to talk about this before the season as we get into previews and all that stuff. But Pete Carroll's already talked about the difference in the offense with Shane Waldron coming over from the Los Angeles Rams. He said the two big differences are tempo, which, okay, they're going to move faster, tempo, but also getting rid of the ball quicker. Is this the year? So is this going to be good or bad for Russell Wilson? I think there's an argument to be made that even though Brian Schottenheimer was not exactly loved by the analytics community, he ran the ball too much and all that stuff, they still played to Russell Wilson's skill set. Play action heavy attack, vertical passing attack, opportunity for big time throws, for high grading, for chunk plays, right? That all plays to Russell Wilson. Is this going to be a situation where he still has enough of those plays, or are they going to try to stretch it horizontally so much or get rid of the ball so much that they're going to leave some of those big plays on the table? I think that's going to be one of the bigger storylines in the NFL this year as far as what the new system is. Is it playing to Russell Wilson's strength? Is it benefiting him or actually, maybe taking away some of his big playability?
And I think the fact that we still don't know how much of these things are impacting Wilson is a big ding against him compared with the likes of Rodgers or Mahomes or Brady or, you know, those kinds of things. We are still collectively, including the Seahawks, still kind of in the dark about like how good is Wilson in any situation or how much do we need to take things off his plate.
Justin Simmons has become the best all-around safety, one of the best all-around safeties in the league. He had a breakout with 2019 season, carried it over in 2020. Great fit for what Vic Fangio does. Vic Fangio, to be fair, there's a pretty good history of Fangio's safeties grading well.
Yes.
So when you talk about scheme fits and all that stuff, sometimes you don't look at safety, but there's definitely certain schemes where safeties tend to grade well. But Simmons has been that guy, plays the run well, playmaker. A lot of two high safety looks that do play to his skill set pretty well.
Yeah, he's ostensibly a free safety, but he makes more plays in the run game than pretty much any other free safety you're going to find in the NFL. That guy ranks in the top 10 every year in terms of defensive stops, and he's like the only free safety in that list. Everybody else is like a full-time strong safety in the box. Simmons is the one exception.
And let's wrap it up with Trent Williams. What an incredible season. He missed the entire 2019 season. Hadn't seen him since 2018. And he led the league in overall grade among tackles for the third time in his career. Now, should we be looking at this and saying the three times that he did that were 2013, 16, and 20, and say, okay, well, Trent Williams would be the best again in, what, 2024, 25? maybe he'll take a little break here. But, man, you know, he reunited with Kyle Shanahan, too. He had played in that Shanahan system in Washington years ago, and he just destroys people in the run game.
Yeah, I mean, his highlight reel in terms of just burying defenders is ridiculous. He had a couple of plays against the Cardinals where he just absolutely annihilated defenders. There was one that surfaced on Twitter again recently where, like, just imagine being that linebacker, because it's the 49ers, right? It's not like you know right. What's happening immediately. Like, your read isn't instantaneous anyway. They're doing a bunch of stuff that means you have to like react and check your keys and figure out where exactly the play is going and the ball is going. So you're a linebacker. You've got that the split second of hesitation of diagnosing all that and looking up and figuring out where you're supposed to be moving to. And then you look up and you just see this 300 plus pound Mack truck steaming in your direction with a full head of steam ready to annihilate you. And I can't remember who it was. It might have been Isaiah Simmons, or it might have been
somebody in Arizona.
Yeah,
Hicks.
It might have been Hicks, but anyway, like he does
again,
this sort
poor
of
linebackers, man. Poor linebackers.
The hesitation step, you know, eventually figures out where the ball is, and then you just see him, you know, head turns to where he's supposed to be, and at that point, Williams is like a yard away sprinting and is about to just bury him. Like, that's how are you supposed to? That's what linebackers have to deal with right now.
And that's what Bobby Wagner has to deal with. Before we talk to Bobby Wagner, quick reminder, the College Football Preview magazine is going to be out on June 28th. Is that today? Because we're recording this early.
Oh,
yeah, it's today. It's today. Out today. That's what happens when you record early, Sam. A little inside baseball there. It's out today. 600-plus pages of analysis, the best returning players for all 130 college teams, advanced scheme breakdown, strength of schedule, and projected wins. It's our College Football Preview magazine over at pff.com. Let's get to Bobby Wagner. We'll discuss how difficult it is for poor linebackers in today's NFL and see how disrespected he feels at his number 8 ranking on the PFF 50. We also anticipated a Bobby Wagner interview. We had Bobby Wagner. We had it slated. He backed out. He dropped the ball. So it's okay. We're going to get him back on here. But we did the entire episode teasing this Bobby Wagner interview that will not be there as part of the Monday episode.
Yeah.
So rather than going back to edit the episode, it's a lot of work. I mentioned it a bunch of times. It's called professional tease in the business here, Sam. We're not going to go back and fix it. So you're going to listen to the Monday episode. And when I say Bobby Wagner's going to be there, just ignore it. And just know he'll be there on a future show.
Of course, the people that are only listening to that show and not listening to this one aren't going to get your warning.
We'll put a disclaimer in the no Bobby Wagner will be appearing
not
on
featuring
the show.
Bobby Wagner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we'll do that. Or we'll put like a timestamp in like where Bobby Wagner doesn't show up or something.
That'd be great. Yeah. Like, you know, at 1 hour, 22 minutes, Bobby Wagner not appears.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's good.
I like it.
We even did an outro like
that. All mistakes should be fixed.
We even said like, thanks Bobby Wagner for joining the show.
Yeah.
That's fake.
Didn't happen.
Never happened.
Never came out.
He'll be on later.
It's a good thing we didn't try and like vamp and like talk about some things that Bobby said.
Hey, Bobby said some interesting things, didn't he?
Yeah.
Nope. No, he didn't.
Show up.
We are the most professional podcast in the world.
Well,
so that's
the beauty about just scratching the surface of professionalism. You don't have to go through all the hassle of like the proper way to fix things.
When expectations are low,
right?
You always
just roll right on through it.
All right. Special thanks to Bobby Wagner, our guest here on and break down the PFF 50. Again, we'll be back here on Thursday breaking down the second half of the PFF 50 and everything you need to know about who just missed the list and who's going to be on the list next year. So thanks to everybody for tuning in. We'll see you guys Thursday.